Today is a really big day. As I mentioned, we finish our mini collection within a collection as we've been studying the ancient festivals reinstituted by the returning exiles in the book of Ezra. And we're asking, how do these ancient festivals inform how we are to worship today? And just for context, just because we've been in this passage for 9 weeks now, and so this is the last day we're on this passage. We're going to move on. But I want us to go to Ezra chapter 3, 4 through 6, just so we don't lose the plot. This is the word of the Lord. Then in accordance with what is written, they celebrated the festival of tabernacles with the required number of burnt offerings prescribed for each day. After that, they presented the regular burnt offerings, the new moon sacrifices, and the sacrifices for all the appointed sacred festivals of the Lord, as well as those brought as freewill offerings to the Lord. On the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, though the foundation of the Lord's temple had not been laid. Right? So we've been talking about how they started reinstituting worship among the people, but to do that, they restructured their entire yearly calendar, and they reinstituted these ancient festivals that were prescribed to their ancestors so that they could have a regular rhythm of worship throughout the year. And so we're on the last one. Today we arrive at the last festival, the Sabbath, the best one. So we're going to open up to Leviticus chapter 23, verses 1 through 3. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, 'These are my appointed festivals, the appointed festivals of the Lord, which you are to proclaim as sacred assemblies. There are 6 days when you may work, but the seventh day is a day of Sabbath rest, a day of sacred assembly. You are not to do any work wherever you live. It is a Sabbath to the Lord.'" You've probably heard of Sabbath before, if not in church, in the world. It's kind of like a hot thing right now. Out of all the ancient festivals that we've studied, I think this might be one of the most important ones. Because when you get this one right, all the other ones seem to fall into place. And when you don't feel like doing all the other prescribed festivals that we've been talking about, and you do this one, you feel inspired to do the rest of them. What does God say? God says, "Set 1 day aside during the week and make space to rest. Stop working, stop grinding, stop striving, and be in the presence of God and rest." God says, rest. This is hard for us, especially as Americans. I looked up modern day statistics. It's reported by Forbes that in 2025, 66% of American employees are experiencing burnout at work. So 2/3 of this room, basically y'all over here in this section, you guys are burnt out at work, and the rest of you, you're about to be there. And this is especially true of Gen Z and millennials. They say while the average American used to experience peak burnout at the age of 42. Can you guess what the average age of Gen Z and millennials experiencing peak burnout is? Can you guess? 30. 25. 25's baby, yo. I'm 38. That's crazy. The new average age where Gen Z and millennials are burning out, their peak burnout, they're crashing out, is 25 years old. America is ranked 29 out of 41 countries that are part of this study when it comes to work-life balance, right? So we're in the bottom quarter. The bottom line is we don't know how to stop working and we don't know how to rest. We're literally working ourselves into the ground. And so 1 day a week, this is revolutionary. This is countercultural. God says, stop work and rest. But the kind of rest that God is talking about isn't just doing nothing and vegging out to K-pop demon hunters like we're going to do after service today. You know as well as I do, it's possible to not do anything the entire day, to veg out and not feel rested after, right? Have you ever needed a vacation from your day off, right? It's very true. It's a different kind of rest that God is prescribing, found not just in inactivity, but in the right specific kind of activity. To understand this, we got to go back to the beginning in Genesis chapter 2. This is the creation narrative. It says, "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Listen, some of us, God rested. Think about that. Some of us think we're better than God. Like, God rested. He took a day off, and some of us can't do that. But that's why he tells us this is the rhythm of creation. When you take one day to Sabbath to rest, all the other days fall into place. And so it says God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy. Now, you got to pay attention to this, because this is actually the first time that the word holy is used in Scripture. This is the first time that word holy pops up. And it's not used to describe a person. It's not used to describe a place or a thing. It's used to describe a day. In the ancient world, right, the gods, they were found in the world of space, right, not in time. Meaning if you wanted to find the gods, you had to travel to a physical place, a holy mountain or a holy temple or a holy cave. But God doesn't make a holy place. He doesn't make a holy sanctuary first. He doesn't make a holy temple first. The first thing he does is he makes a holy day. Rabbi Abraham Heschel, he says, now what was the first holy object in the history of the world? Was it a mountain? Was it an altar? The mythical mind would expect that after heaven and earth have been established, God would create a holy place, a holy mountain, or a holy spring whereupon a sanctuary is to be established. Yet it seems as if to the Bible, it is holiness in time, the Sabbath, which comes first. When history began, there was only one holiness in the world, holiness in time. Rabbi Heschel, he actually calls the Sabbath architecture in time. He says the Sabbaths are like our great cathedrals, right? For God, the entire cosmos is his temple. He's literally everywhere. So if you want to find God, you don't need to climb a mountain. You don't need to go to a holy temple. You don't need to find a shrine. You don't even need to come here to Verde Club on Sundays at 11 a.m. every Sunday morning. He's all around you, with you. And this is great news for us because it means that we can be in the presence of God anywhere. But what it requires of us is that we would set aside time to come awake and alive in his presence. Now, out of all the festivals, I think the Sabbath is probably the most misunderstood and misused sacred assembly. I don't know if you know this, but Sabbath has found its prominence in mainstream appeal, in the workplace, in business. People are buying into the idea of Sabbath because of how it benefits them, how it makes them feel better emotionally, physically, and how it increases their productivity and their happiness, which are all great things. Those are all great byproducts of the Sabbath, but this is not why we are called to keep the Sabbath. The primary goal of Sabbath is not to increase our productivity, is not to expand our lifespan, is not to broaden our emotional bandwidth. The primary purpose for keeping the Sabbath is for Christ to be formed in us. Hear me, church. Sabbath is not primarily about us or how it benefits us. It's about God and how God forms us. It's making space and time for God to produce Christ within us. The Sabbath forms me, but it is not for me. But we live in a culture where we really feel like Sabbath exists for us. And we try to use Sabbath, we bend Sabbath to meet our will and our wants and our likes and desires. And so this is typically what happens. And if you resonate with me, say a silent amen, right? We overwork ourselves all week long, neglecting boundaries for rest, right? We neglect our time with God, our time with spouses, our time with loved ones, our time with our kids. We neglect our emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual well-being. We neglect soul care. And what happens is we get to the end of the week and we get to the weekend. Thank God it's Friday. And we get to the Sabbath and we're exhausted and we're burned out. And we use the Sabbath to recharge ourselves so that we can just do it all over again. Does that sound familiar for y'all? Because it sounds familiar for me. We use the Sabbath, right, to be present for those we should have been present with all week. We use the Sabbath as a quick band-aid for our mental, emotional, and physical and spiritual well-being. But the Sabbath was never meant to be a catch-all for all the things that we neglected throughout the week. You got to hear me on this, church. The Sabbath was never meant to be a safety net to catch all the things that we neglected throughout the entire week. Actually, when we do the Sabbath right, it radically changes the way that we approach our work week. It changes the way that we balance work and life. It changes the way we show up in our relationship. It changes the way that we care for ourselves. Remember, Sabbath isn't just about a day. The great Walter Brueggemann said, people who Sabbath live all 7 days differently. It's a day of rest that cultivates a spirit of restfulness all week long. It's a day of worship that cultivates a spirit of worship all week long. And so we see throughout Scripture that actually there are consequences when we don't keep the Sabbath. Throughout Scripture, when the people didn't keep the Sabbath, there was a separation that happened between them and God. A physical, spiritual, emotional, and mental separation, and almost always led to the people being exiled away from God, right? In the ancient world, think about this. When the people didn't keep the Sabbath, what happened? The land didn't get to rest. And when the land didn't get to rest, it didn't get to produce naturally. And remember a few weeks ago when we studied the Festival of Tabernacles, the people, they were to leave a portion of their harvest behind after they had gathered all their crops. They were to leave a portion of their harvest behind. Do you remember why? They're supposed to leave it behind for the vulnerable and the poor, right? They're supposed to set aside a portion for them. When the people don't rest and they're working hard and they're working the land nonstop, harvesting for their own gain and their own prosperity, the vulnerable and the poor don't get their portion. Does that sound familiar? Sounds just like America, doesn't it? In our capitalistic society where we can't stop producing and consuming, do you know who gets the short end of the stick in our society? It's the poor. It's the vulnerable. You've heard it said the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. When you don't keep the Sabbath, it's not just you that's affected. It's the vulnerable that pays the price. It's your loved ones that pay the price. It's you ultimately that pays the price. And so failing to keep the Sabbath inevitably leads to exile, separation from God, separation from creative order, separation even from the land. Now, in Hebrew, the word holy is this word kodosh, which literally means unique or special or uncommon, right? Think a birthday. A birthday is not a morally good day. It's just a unique day. It's a day set apart to celebrate something unique. A theological definition of holy might be to set aside for God's special or unique purposes, right? When we think of holy, we tend to think of moral goodness, of good or bad, right or wrong. And while it can mean that, in this context, it's less about morality and more about uniqueness, right? A day can't really be morally good or evil, but it can be normal or unique. So Sabbath is to be a unique day, a special day, an uncommon day. In the ancient world, in many places, there were these holy pots and holy pans, and even holy utensils. Some of y'all have the good utensils you hide only for guests of honor, right, in your home? I know you do. We call it china or fine silverware, whatever it might be. In the ancient world, people had holy pots, they had holy pans, they had holy utensils that they only used in the tabernacle, in the place of worship. And they weren't like ordinary utensils that they used throughout the week. They were set apart for something sacred. This is what the Sabbath is to be. Now, we have kids, and we've been gifted many times Aesop. Is that how you pronounce it? Aesop soap? It's the nice soap. I tell you what, guys, we do not leave that soap out all week long, okay? We take that soap out when it's time for community groups or it's time for someone to come over for dinner. The kids ain't using that stuff, okay? It's set aside for a special purpose. What the Sabbath is taking a day in the week and you're setting it aside. It's not like other days. It's unique. It's supposed to be special. Now, in the same way, the Sabbath is to be holy, set apart for the rest of the week. It's meant to be different and unique. But the question is, what is it set apart for? The Sabbath is a day that's set apart, set aside, not just for stopping work, not just for rest, but for God himself. In other words, it's a day for worship. You know, when we think of worship, we tend to think of singing. By the way, let's give it up for Grace. Grace killed it today, didn't she? Right? We think of worship like singing and lifting hands and playing instruments. But while that is an expression of worship, right, we've been talking about how worship is so much more. Worship is to orient and often reorient our entire lives toward God. And this can look like singing, but it can also look like paying attention, giving our time, our resources, and our affection to God. Anything we do to center God is worship. And so we find that Sabbath actually has this beautiful progression. First, we stop working, which helps us enter into rest. Some of us can't rest because we're moving too fast. We're always on the go. But when we stop, we're finally able to rest. And as we rest, our energy comes back so that we can delight in the world, delight in our lives, delight in creation, right? How many of you, it's hard to enjoy life because you're so tired all the time? Have you ever had like a fun day plan, but like the week has just caught up with you? And even though you show up, it's hard for you to enjoy. Maybe you planned a hike or you had a party set, but you're just cranky. You're in a bad mood because you're physically tired. You're emotionally drained, mentally drained from the week that came before, right? When we rest, it actually opens us up to delighting in the world, delighting in our relationships, delighting in creation all the more. And as we delight, we can't help but be filled with gratitude and praise and wonder and worship for the goodness of God. Listen, when we do the Sabbath right, you know, sometimes you come into worship and you kind of have to will yourself into saying, I love you, God, or I appreciate you, God. When we actually do the Sabbath right, you don't have to force that stuff. When you start delighting in the world, you know, my kids, I could tell when they're really happy because they start singing these random songs about things they're doing or things they're playing with, right? Lately, we've had to buy like 50,000 Happy Meals because we have to get all the BTS figurines from the Happy Meal toys. And so like when the kids, they play with those toys, they're like singing. They're so happy. I don't have to tell them, hey, be happy. Hey, start singing. Hey, start delight. They naturally, their bodies, their entire being starts radiating joy when they find something they delight in. And this is what Sabbath opens us up to. One of my favorite theologians, Ruth Haley Barton, says, I know what it's like to rest for hours until I have the energy to delight in something. Good food, a good book, a leisurely walk, a long-awaited conversation with someone I love. I know what it's like to feel joy and hope and peace flow back into my body and soul the way I thought it might never come again. I know what it's like to see my home and my children through the Sabbath eyes of enjoyment. I know what it's like to have rest turn into delight and delight turn into gratitude and gratitude into worship. Isn't that beautiful? That's the progression of Sabbath. That's what's on the line. And some of us, we can't rest, so we can't delight. And we can't delight, and we wonder why we can't worship. Why it's so hard to think of things that we thank God for. Why it's so hard to stir up affection for Him. But if we would get the Sabbath right, we would be able to enter into that natural progression, creative order, to delight in the world and to worship God. Now, the Jews, they don't talk about practicing the Sabbath. That's what we're talking about today. What they say is actually, we are called to keep the Sabbath. They talk about keeping the Sabbath. In Exodus 20, verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Right? Whenever I drop food in our house, luckily, you know, we don't need a vacuum too much because we have a tiny 8-pound Chiweenie dog that just eats everything, which is great for kids, by the way. If you want a clean house and you have a baby, buy a small dog, okay? Because everything the kids drop, Fig gets. But every now and then, we'll give Fig a treat. Fig is the name of our dog, by the way. It's not the fruit Fig. His name is Fig. He looks like a little fig. When we give him a treat, I tell you what, nothing in the world, no matter how strong I am, nothing in the world can make pry his jaws open when he has something that he loves. He protects that thing. He keeps that thing. The image that's evoked when they say keep the Sabbath is that of a treasure that you literally have to guard and protect and watch over, right? Keeping the day unique and set apart, keeping the day special, protecting its sacredness, guarding its uniqueness. You know, Chris and I, we're coming up on 10 years next year. We're celebrating our 10-year anniversary next April. Yeah, let's clap for that. 10 years. Marriage is hard work, but it's beautiful, okay, guys? And you know what? There are so many times where we had to protect our marriage. But not just that, we had to protect our date nights. We had to protect our anniversaries so that they don't just bleed into each other. It's not just a normal day. It's a day set apart where we intentionally delight in each other and work on our relationship and pay attention to one another. This is what it means. We have to guard and protect the uniqueness of the Sabbath day. When we treat the Sabbath just like any other day, doing what we please, we actually profane it. My favorite theologian, Eugene Peterson, he calls it a bastard Sabbath. It's a day masquerading as Sabbath rest that actually is all about self-serving ego, right? It's a bastard Sabbath unless we keep it unique, set apart for God. And so we don't want it to use its uniqueness. We want the Sabbath day to be holy and set apart. And there's three ways of looking at the Sabbath that I believe is going to help us do that. The first idea that I want to present to you is that Sabbath is a day set apart to pay attention. It's a day set apart to make room to listen for God's voice, to see what he's trying to communicate to you, to feel and understand what his heart is. If Sabbath is truly set apart for something different, if we really do believe that something different can happen today than what happened the last 6 days, then the possibilities, if you think about it, they're endless, right? That makes me genuinely curious. We could show up to Sabbath and say, God, like, how are you going to surprise me today? God, what are you up to today? What do you want to give me today that's different from the other 6 days of the week? What do you want to give to me today? What do you want to speak to me or say to me today that's unique and set apart? What can you do if I really did believe this day was set apart? I want you to think of a really potent or real encounter that you had with God, a real undeniable encounter. How much did that moment matter to you? Right? How much did that change the trajectory of your life or your thought life or your spiritual growth? Right? What if once a week we could create a space just for things like that to happen, where a life-changing encounter with the living God is possible, where we could hear the voice of the Father, where we could receive one word that changes everything? It's not that this can't happen in the other 6 days of the week, but let's just be real. The other 6 days, it gets packed with our own schedules, with our own things, with our own Netflix accounts. Let's be real, how busy and distracted do we get throughout the week? It's hard to even break away for a single moment to pay all of our undivided attention to God. But on the Sabbath, on this one day, we say, here I am, God. I'm open, I'm listening, I'm available. Sabbath is a day where we say, I'm here, I'm listening, you have my attention. Speak to me, God. I think I use this analogy all the time, but a couple years ago, I did the float spa. Have you guys heard of that in the mission? It's literally a deprivation chamber where there's no light, there's no sound, and you're literally floating in a pot of water with Epsom salt, so you're floating naturally, and you're just in there for an hour with complete silence, complete darkness. And I remember the first time that I did it, how disturbing it was to be in there with no sound, with no visuals. But I realized that was the first time in how many years that I literally stopped, blocked out all the noise, blocked out all the visuals, and paid attention to myself. And the first thing that I do, I started almost having like a panic attack because I didn't know what to do with myself. And all of a sudden, emotions that I had been outrunning with busyness in my life started catching up to me. Thoughts that I had blocked out or distracted myself from started popping up into my head. Sabbath is a day where we could pay attention not just to God, but pay attention to what's happening within ourselves. Listen, some of y'all are more emotionally messed up than you know. Some of you are more mentally burned out than you know. And you don't know because you're running so fast and you're so busy and your calendars are packed and you're always listening to noise and podcasts and TV shows. Sabbath is a day where we could pay attention to God, but we also let God help us pay attention to what's happening within ourselves. The Sabbath is a day set apart to pay attention. The second thing, Sabbath is a day set apart to surrender. One day a week, we stop grinding. One day a week, we stop striving. One day a week, we stop trying to make fetch happen. One day a week, we start trying to grow, stop trying to grow our businesses, stop trying to increase our influencer accounts. We stop trying. We stop fighting. We stop striving. And Sabbath is one day of the week where we could say, I surrender. I accept the way that things are, and I say, God, I trust you. Now, this is not resignation. This is not giving up. This is not quitting. It's not I give up because the problem is too great. It's not it's impossible, so forget about it. It's a way of saying, I need you, God. I can't do it on my own. I'm going to do all that I can 6 days of the week. But on this one day, I stop and I surrender to confess that I need you and I trust you with my life. Dallas Willard, he defines grace as God doing in me, for me, and through me what I can't do for myself. Sabbath is a day to enter into that grace, to lay down our swords, to lay down our plows, to lay down our keyboards and our smartphones and our emails, and lift our eyes up to where our help truly comes from. And once we do that, it actually empowers us to go into the next 6 days, knowing that I'm not fighting alone, that I have a God who cares about what I care about, but also who fights alongside me, who carries the burden of having to do everything. And so Sabbath is a day set apart to surrender. And the last thing, Sabbath is a day set apart to center. All week long, so many things are competing for our worship and for our attention. This is going to be quite a long quote by David Foster Wallace, but I really think it's going to capture what many of us feel day to day. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there's actually no such thing as atheism. There's no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And the compelling reason for maybe choosing some sort of God or spiritual type thing to worship is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough, never feel you have enough. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally plant you. That's the phase of life I'm in right now. Just kidding. Worship power, you will feel weak and afraid, and you will need ever more power over others. Sorry, I lost it. Ever more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, you will end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out, and so on. Look, the insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, it is that they are unconscious. They are default settings. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into day after day. I don't know about you, but that sounds terrifying to me. It's a type of worship that you slip into day after day. It's our default setting. But how many of us live like this? It's terrifying. It's an unconscious type of worship. The question isn't what are you worshiping, it's what are you worshiping. We're all worshiping something, and what we worship determines what kind of life we experience. And if we're not careful and intentional about what we worship, what we center our lives around, we'll find ourselves living a kind of life that we never wanted to live. And so Sabbath, it actually reveals what we worship. It reveals what's been occupying our minds and our hearts all week long. This is why, hear me, church, on your day off, what are you usually thinking about? Did I get an email? Did I get a Slack message from the office? Oh my God, I got that project that's coming up next week. Oh man, my schedule's so packed, right? Even on our day off, we have work on our mind. Why is that the case? It's because we've been worshiping work all week long. Or we see it when we can't put our phones down, right? What does that communicate when we can't put our phones down? It's because we've been worshiping social media and entertainment all week long. Sabbath reveals what we actually worship and forces us to confront our idols, right? If you've ever taken a day off and say, I'm going to unplug, and you literally can't put down your phone, it reveals that your phone is actually an idol in your life, right? On Sabbath, We recenter ourselves to make God the one thing, the most important thing once again, to make him the object of our worship. The deepest rest and delight that we'll ever find is in God. He's what we crave deep in our being, whether we realize it or not. But we spend so much of our lives trying to fill it with other things, don't we? But on the Sabbath, we recenter ourselves on the truth that God, only God, can fulfill the deepest longings of our heart. But this is hard, right? Because oftentimes we know that we should want God, but if we're just to be real with ourselves, we don't want God. We don't feel like we want God. Sabbath is what many theologians call arduous good. Have you heard of the concept of arduous good? It's this idea that people don't neglect Sabbath because they don't think it's good. They think Sabbath is great. They neglect Sabbath because it's hard, right? Many of us, we this is amen, brother. Like, Sabbath sounds great, sounds amazing. But if we're to be real, we don't do it, not because we don't think it's good. We don't do it because it's actually really hard, right? There's this dangerous ideology in our culture that says if it doesn't feel good, it's not good, right? Then it's harmful, it's toxic. Why deny yourself? But what's good should always feel good immediately. That's what we believe. That's our ethos. But how many of you guys know that's not the case, right? There are some kinds of good that don't come easy. There are some kinds of good that don't always feel good at the moment. There are some kinds of good that take time. This is arduous good. Dr. Gary Brashears, he says, your strongest desires are not your deepest desires. You know how I know this? Because when you're starving and you see that McDonald's right up the street, there's something inside of you that wants that McDonald's, even though your body's actually craving nutrients and good, real, healthy food. Although McDonald's is really good, right? There are deep desires within us that don't always feel like the strongest desires, right? Emotions are great servants, but horrible masters. Sabbath says, even though I may not feel it right now, you are what my heart desires, God. And it invites us to center our lives around the one who gives us life to the full. It reorients us to place our worship where it truly belongs. So we understand that Sabbath is a day set apart to center, to surrender, and to pay attention. But how do we do this? Very simple. This week, I want you to try this. I want you to just try this and test me on it. Test God on it. This day, keep the Sabbath. Set aside a full 24-hour period to do no work and to just rest, delight, worship, to pay attention, to surrender, and to center. And if you can't do 24 hours, do 12 hours. If you can't do 12, do 6. Do a meal. I don't know. Start wherever you can. I know even economically, this is not possible for everybody. That's actually side note, side tangent. This is why in the church, when we talk about Sabbath, it's just not a personal thing. We also look for members in our community that are economically unavailable to do a full 24 hours, and we provide respite for them. We say, we'll watch your kids so you can go rest, right? This is why the church exists, right? So do whatever you can this week, but I really encourage you, take 24 full hours. What John Mark Comer, he's the author that talks a lot about the Sabbath. What he'll actually do is he'll start Sabbath the night before, and he'll do something physical, something embodied to mark that Sabbath to start. He'll light a candle, right? And then they'll have a meal, and then he'll end it the next night at dinner time, and they'll blow out the candle to signify the Sabbath has happened and ended, right? So do the Sabbath. But secondly, protect the Sabbath, right? By setting healthy boundaries around your work. Don't open your email. Don't open your Slack messages. And set aside intentional time to pay attention, to surrender, and to center. I teach on this at least once a year, and our church members never do it. And I teach on it again. But I want you to really practice and try it this week. I believe this is the group, right? This is the group that's going to do it. So this week, set aside 24 hours to practice the Sabbath, to keep the Sabbath. Let's end with this quote by Rabbi Abraham Heschel. Unless one learns how to relish the taste of Sabbath while still in this world, unless one is initiated into the appreciation of eternal life, one will be unable to enjoy the taste of eternity in the world to come. The essence of the world to come is Sabbath eternal, and the seventh day in time is an example of eternity. Theologians say that Sabbath looks both backward and forward in time. It's an aftertaste of the Garden of Eden, and it's a foretaste of the New Jerusalem. And so on the Sabbath, we get to taste eternity. The Sabbath is a preview. It's a trailer of eternity that we have of rest and delight and worship in God, where delight will be our only experience, where there will be no more toiling or working or striving, where we'll truly be able to rest. And so in a sense, when we Sabbath, we're practicing for eternity.